evening, one and all, and yes, a happy new year. You've had the shows you've had have been old ones because I took a couple of weeks off over the holidays, only off from the shows, not from work, I might add. Work was even worse than normal, but I am here and it's a new year and I've got a load of great guests already lined up for the year, I can tell you. Well, I was talking to my guest before the show starts. You know, we had a pretty bad year last year. It was a number of times with illnesses and this going wrong and that going wrong. This year, it's going to be a good one. Well, that's what I'm telling myself anyway. But it started off good and the show started off good. I remember pressing the go button and everything like that. So we're going good on that. But what can I tell you about my guest today? Well, she's a writer, activist, filmmaker. But she was raised with a couple of medical issues, suffered as a child, but she got through it all. She got a BA and everything like that. Well, now she shared some of those early issues, shall I say, and we'll talk about that in her book, because on the show today, and I can't say one and only because I found three of them before I found her. Write books. On my show today, I have Jen Epstein. Hi, Jen. How are you doing?
Hi, Derek. How are you?
I'm fair to middling, I think, today. I think that's safe. I'm not risking any more.
Well, fair to middling, if you're at that point, then you're doing well.
Exactly. You know, I mean, it's a third of the way through January, after all.
That's right.
Okay, well, as I said, you've written this wonderful book called Don't Get Too Excited. It's Just a Pair of Shoes and Other Laments from My Life. And it basically is. It's about your life and the struggles you've had as a child. And basically, sort of, how can I say, telling us these issues, but with a little bit of humour along the way, because talking to you already, I can see there's humour's a pretty important to you.
Absolutely. not to be too glib, but I always say if we don't have humour, if we can't laugh at our life, then what's the point of living at all?
Totally right. I mean,
I want anyone to take that completely seriously when I say that. Everyone should value their life, but I'm just saying
exactly.
That humor gets us through the toughest times.
As I was told once, cheer up, things could get worse. So I cheered up, and sure enough, they got worse.
But they could be even worse than
that. They could be. Yeah. You were sort of when you were young, you had a lot of issues, fears and stuff like that. Even down to sort of throwing a ball and tying shoelaces and stuff like that. And your parents, I believe, were in the medical field, weren't they?
They were mental health professionals. My father was a psychologist. My mother was a social worker.
And, with you having these issues and obviously diagnosed with OCD, the obsessive compulsive disorder, try saying that quickly, it's really hard, isn't it? No wonder everybody
really
just says OCD. It is one of those, especially if you've got it yourself. But you suffered not only with that, but obviously the self-confidence and a group of fears and stuff like that. That must have been really hard growing up in, not just for you, but for your parents who carried that sort of stuff every day in their lives.
Yeah, well, because I grew up at a time in the late 70s, early 80s, where it wasn't as, let's say, common to label your child. Now there's everything from ADHD to, hyperactivity to, but it runs the gamut. But at that time, that was, those labels were really sort of in their infancy stage. But with both of my parents being mental health professionals, it was, let's say they were a little bit ahead of their time, because it was more common in their field to sort of be keeping tabs on scrutinizing every you know, little tick or you know, idiosyncrasy that might,
right.
you know, seem a little bit different.
It's funny. It's funny you said, though, about, you know, in those days and how things were looked at. I was talking to somebody just before Christmas, it must have been. I don't remember anybody in my junior school having peanut mm-hmm. allergies.
Right. That's the new one.
Yeah, I mean, and now you've got allergies to everything. You know, I've got allergies right. to waking up in the morning.
Right.
It's
right.
crazy.
Right. All these schools are these peanut-free zones. So
yeah.
don't send your kid with peanut brownies for their birthday or for peanut butter sandwiches. Perish the thought. So.
But when did it start? I mean, when did it start? I mean, you'd have thought it had been around for a long while. It's just that people just said, I've got a bad stomach. Must be, you know, that's just a bad stomach. No, it's peanut right. allergies.
Well, I guess, yeah, if you went into anaphylactic shock or your face was blowing up like a balloon, then perhaps it was more than, I've got a bad stomach. But yeah,
things
were not as common. And I think, you know, a lot of it has to do with environmental sensitivities and people's immune systems not being as strong because we use all this antibacterial stuff. Yeah,
totally right. I keep telling about. I mean, in fact, somebody wrote an article in the last month in the paper, I think it was, encouraging parents to let their children play in dirt because because their immune system just isn't there anymore.
Right. Yeah. Because you're on antibiotics for everything, including bacterial, which you're not viral, you're not supposed to be on antibiotics for, but they prescribe antibiotics for everything now, so everyone's immune systems are not as
exactly. Now, obviously, yourself growing up, you must have picked up on the concerns of your parents.
Yes, I did, and so as I sort of paraphrase in the introduction, I, you know, mentioned, you know, I don't want to indicate that this is what happened, that this is why this happened. But I did pick up, and you know, this is how I developed obsessive compulsive disorder, because it doesn't pay to dwell on that. You know, it happened, and now I cope with it. And I cope through it through humor, and I cope through writing and having a strong network of friends and being an activist. So, I picked up on my parents. I sensed that they thought that there was something that was different about me, and that made me anxious. That made me, you know, perseverate more about what is it that's wrong with me, and you know, obsessing over why do they think that there's something different about me? What is it that I did today that would prompt them to feel that way or think that way? So I think that had a lot to do with how some of the irrational fears and some of the anxieties, the obsessive thought developed was realizing that there was something different about me, and that others, especially those closest to me, noticed that there was something quote unquote different about me.
Now, obviously, you know, you're getting through that and you know, teenagers, junior proms, etc. But no, not for you. Made even
right.
worse because you were then up to Israel for a couple of years.
Yep. Yes. Living in a dorm situation with other people's other people's dirt and, you know, in the shower and you know, and sharing, you know, a room with three other girls and you know, having to do laundry at the campus laundromat with, you know, you know, hundreds of other students, boarding students and day students, and you know, being in a country that I, you know, having that culture shock and not having close family, where I felt comfortable going on alternate weekends when we were asked to leave campus and get to know all of our contacts who we might not otherwise have had a chance to,
oh, wow,
to get to know. So we had these approved lists of relatives and friends and colleagues of our families with, you know, that could host us. And I had an adopted family because I had a very short list. And so I had total strangers getting to know my various idiosyncrasies and me having to deal with their dirt and commingling. And so, you know, that would be a strain for any 16-year-old teenager, but, you know, certainly someone who has a variety of quirks.
Well, I mean, and it's not just things like that. I mean, it's things that people don't think about. The upheaval of moving, you know, to a new apartment, or, you know, even going on holiday, visiting somewhere new, that must be totally, you know, a real trial for yourself.
Yeah, it is. I mean, moving, you know, I didn't expect it to spiral out of control, but I had made the poor logistical decision of going off my meds because I thought I was ready, and it added, you know, this is, you know, moving is stressful for anyone. So then, especially with you know, going off your meds and then having this situation that you know, exasperates stress. It was not well timed.
Right.
So, yeah.
And even you know, as I said about visited, because I think it was Costa Rica you went to, but you even had to face bats there and stuff like that.
Bats and again, it's only certain regions of Costa Rica, but as far as I was concerned, I had to stave off of ice completely. So, and then ice became eggs, and it became cheese, and it became milk, and it became, it kind of limited the joys of experiencing a new, you know, this tropical oasis, let's call it,
I mean, in your book, you know, Don't Get Too Excited, which we're talking about, which takes you through the trials, tribulations, anxiety, and everything that you've had to get through in your life. And as we said earlier, you know, with some humour along the way, obviously, to make it, did you set out trying to help other people at the same time as telling your story?
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, you know, my quirks and my humor, my idiosyncrasies, I think, you know, made the situation less stressful and more enjoyable for other people. You know, there were several people who had not extreme nausea from the, you know, I was in Costa Rica in August. And that's like the, you know, we're talking about, you know, 100 degree, no air conditioning. So, you know, a lot of people had, you know, were very nauseous from the heat, and you know, their bodies were adjusting to different types of foods. And so here I come in with this international travel kit.
Right.
That that, you know, I swore up and down, and this is true, that my company provided this as a free service of, you know, travel immunizations and this international travel kit, which had, you know, everything from latex gloves to gauze bandages to extreme nausea medication. So here I come swooping in with this international travel kit, and my fellow travelers were travel mates were a little bit skeptical and raised a brow here and there about why was I carrying it. But in the end, hey, it was helpful.
So. There you go. It was helpful, but illness is something else that basically turned your life upside down again when you ended up in hospital.
Yes, and it really blindsided me. There were absolutely no early symptoms other than maybe a little bit of fluctuation of weight gain and loss. But other than that, there was just no indication. I just ended up wailing on the bathroom floor one day, and it was misdiagnosed, and they sent me home without doing the proper testing, and ended up in the hospital the next day. And I had never been hospitalized before, and for someone who has my type of OCD, which I have irrational fears around contamination and germs. So,
right.
What do? You stick me in a hospital.
Hospital, right. But all the fears are catching everything else that's there, right.
Yeah, with the woman in the next bed over is recovering from pneumonia. Perfect.
Right.
but I got through it, and you know, that's one of the, you know, with OCD, even though there are all these irrational fears and there's all these feelings of being paralyzed by these rituals and compulsions and fears, you are very resilient when you need to be in the situations when you need to be, you will prevail. So I made it. There was scars, well, but I made it.
You not only made it, you also made it through writing the book, because that must have been, I mean, because obviously just the organization, the paperwork, keeping everything like that, to get that done must have taken something out of you.
Oh, it absolutely did. On so many different levels, and you know, on the level of writing these stories down for the first time, you know, going back into my childhood and really digging in deep to these painful memories. But beyond that, there's all of the different types of communication, email communication, and what if someone doesn't respond to my email, and did they get the draft, and did I send the right version of the manuscript, or was it the one that had the 16 typos in it? So, there it absolutely was part of that process.
when you went back, as you said, going through a lot of these stories, go back through your childhood and stuff like that, did you find it was sort of almost like a healing process in some ways for you as well?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it was a very cathartic experience. I found myself both laughing and crying as I was writing it throughout, laughing at some of the absurdities of what I, you know, how I had reacted to certain situations. And then, you know, of course, when I got into the more painful experiences, delving into that, was certainly an emotional experience.
What sort of response have you had to Don't Get Too Excited?
It's been a very strong, positive response. I think it's been difficult for for some people. Like for my coworkers, one of my coworkers said he just has to pretend when he was reading it, he just had to separate me and just think of me as a character rather than.
Okay.
You know, like as, if I don't think that this is Jen and this is the person that I work with every day, then it's fine.
Right.
But you know, and for a lot of them, you know, there's a one of the chapters in the book about paperwork, as you had mentioned, and where I talk about one of my rituals of checking doors and locks, and you know that it takes me. It's an extended routine for me in the morning to get out of the house because of all of these rituals. And, you know, now my coworkers say, oh, that's why. That's why you get here. And, you know, a little bit later than you're supposed to.
Oh, yes. But no, see, I can relate to that because that's right. Almost like as you get old. I mean, you know, I'm finding I'm writing lists. And you know, and checking things. Did I lock the door? Go and check
right.
it. And then later on, right. I think, are you sure? I'll go and check. But I mean, that's just it. Just you know, it's just part. It's just life in a way, isn't it?
Right. Well, that's the other. I'm sorry. The other aspect.
No,
of
go ahead.
That those are the relatable aspects as well. Even though it may be hard for them to hear some of these experiences that I've had, there's plenty that's relatable and that resonates. That readers are able to latch onto, that my coworkers and friends, and that you know readers who I've never met before, are able to latch onto, because everyone has a little bit of OCD in them, whether it is whether it's diagnosed and clinical or not, everyone has some of those tendencies, and that's one of my goals with this book is to really normalize those experiences so that people are more prone. To come out of the shadows and seek treatment if they are suffering with these symptoms.
My youngest son had OCD and he's a lot better now. So the treatment definitely does work when you can get it at an early enough stage.
They are prescribing. Cognitive behavioral therapy or medications at a much earlier age now. So that is great.
No, it is. It's really good. Now you've got this first book out. You're going to do another one?
I've thought about it. I joke that I have a series. So after Don't Get Too Excited is Don't Get Too Distracted.
Right. Yeah. No, you can see there's a whole different realm there, isn't
right.
it?
Right. Exactly. And it'll be a trilogy. So.
There you go. I could see that happening. I can see. What would you say to somebody who contacted you and said, you know, my child's got OCD, can you recommend anything? What's the sort of thing that you might say to you know, a parent who did that to you?
Well, at first I would ask them if they have sought out a professional to diagnose the condition, and if they've gone through mm-hmm. the various testing procedures to evaluate what the triggers, if they are in fact diagnosed with OCD, what are the triggers? Is it because there are so many different varieties? There's, you know, the ordering and counting, there's contamination, there's so many stepping over cracks and so many different areas to it. So but you know, I would say if that child had been diagnosed by a professional, you know, I would say that it's really going to be a process between the family and the professionals that are working with them to sort of map out a treatment plan. And that treatment plan could be everything from medication and cognitive behavioral therapy to exposure therapy. it really depends on what the symptoms and what the triggers are. But again, I think most importantly, it's to have that kind of support from the parents or from family members, so that the child doesn't feel like they're different, doesn't feel like they've done something wrong or that they've been signaled out, and to really focus on what that child does well. And, to say how this child is really strong in so many different ways and all the skills that they have, that, you know, whether they're, you know, if it's their sense of humor, if it's certain passions that they have, certain hobbies, that these are the things to really focus on rather than what it is that they have difficulties with.
Totally agree. And that's something that even in the work environment, you get that people concentrate on the stuff they don't do well rather than celebrating the stuff they do well.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know we've done well, and that's had a great time together, Jen. But now time is beating us, so I am going to hand the show over to you so you can tell everybody where people can find more about you and, of course, your wonderful book.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Barry. Hello, everyone. You can find me on Twitter at DGTEbook, Instagram at DGTEbook, Facebook, Don't Get Too Excited Book. You can purchase the book on indiebound.org, IndieBound.org, also at barnesandnoble.com and Amazon.
Well, Jen, it's been great chatting to you. Good luck with the book. And, you know, I'm sure if another one comes out, you come back and chat to us again.
Well, that would be wonderful, Barry. Thank you so much for having me on.
My pleasure. Thank you. Well, there you go. My guest today, Jen Epstein, E-P-S-T-E-I-N, and it's J-E-N. And this is talking about her book, Don't Get Too Excited. It's just about a pair of shoes and other laments from my life. Great load of stories, a lot of humor, as you can see, but some very poignant and interesting bits of information along the way about Jen and the struggles she had through her life. Well, that's it for today. I'll be back again tomorrow, but until then, as always, we have one thing left to say. Don't forget.